We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Welcome to the Fantasy Football Report, a RotoViz radio news show brought to you by MyBookie. I'm Blair Andrews on Twitter at AmITheRealBlair. My co-host is Hassan Rahim on Twitter at HRR5010. Hassan, how's it going?
Tremendous, Blair. This is actually my favorite week, the week before Thanksgiving. This was a fantastic slate of games, although, you know, despite a bunch of the really good fantasy teams being on bye.
Yeah, definitely. Big game for a lot of RotoViz favorites. Big week for a lot of RotoViz favorites. Got a lot to discuss, and I'm really excited to be discussing it with our guest today. Joining us on the show is Sean Siegel. Sean is one of the owners of RotoViz and one of the editors and one half of Overtime Ireland. You can follow him on Twitter at FF_contrarian. Sean, thanks for joining us. How's it going?
Awesome. This week has been a lot of fun. We were talking about it before the show. If week seven was one of the worst weeks I have experienced in the decade plus of doing the high stakes pretty seriously, today was one of the best. Maybe not top five, but it was close. Went over 200 in a league where I'm clawing back, have an outside shot at it. Ben Gretsch, who many listeners will know, he and I co-own a main event. And with our win today, we're going to move right into a virtual dead heat for second place, and then having their main event team putting up big points today with all of our RotoViz guys. So yeah, this is it's always fun to come on a Sunday when things are going pretty much perfectly.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's jump right in with one of these RotoViz guys who really had a huge week for us. DJ Moore caught 6 of 9 targets for 126 yards and 2 touchdowns in the Panthers' Week 12 loss to the Saints. So, Sean, this was arguably Moore's best game of his career, and he has, I mean, definitely emerged as the wide receiver one for the Panthers. Would you say, or what would you say is Moore's dynasty value? And where would you be considering him in startups going forward this offseason?
Yeah, well, it's kind of funny because we wrote about Moore a number of times on the site this week. Jack talked about how he was a great buy low candidate, had only scored once, and he obviously gets twice as many touchdowns on the day-to-day. I was going back and look because I updated my dynasty rankings just yesterday, and have a lot of our young favorite wide receivers kind of right in that range. You know, Cortland Sutton, 21, gets shut down today, obviously, by the Bills. Cooper Kupp, 22, Chark, 23. In there with Keenan Allen, who I think is falling, someone who maybe doesn't have the upside anymore, or just someone I don't like to have in that top 20. And Odell Beckham finally broke out a little bit today. Then Christian Kirk, one of our guys at 26, Galladay, 27, DJ Moore at 28, Ridley, someone else who, you know, put up a lot of it in garbage time, but had a big game today, and then Boyd at 30. So really a 10 in a row there for wide receivers. I think after the top running backs, it's very wide receiver heavy in terms of who you want to build your dynasty lineups with. And I think that you could certainly make an argument for more, you know, moving up. I think catching the long pass today, that was one of the things that he's been missing. I know Hassan has some thoughts about his viability as a deep threat versus Curtis Samuel, who we saw struggle a little bit today, I think adjusting to passes. One of the cool things, not only having the long reception for Moore, but also his second, the short touchdown, was sort of a weird adjustment where he sticks out the one hand, makes a fantastic catch. You know, Moore certainly could be as high as 20. You know, if you have him above the rest of those second-year wide receivers, I think that's one of the more interesting things. We're going to see how it shakes out between Sutton, Chark, Kirk, Moore, Ridley. All of those guys you should definitely want to own. Am I high enough on in there, Hassan?
Yeah, I think you are. And really, the idea, it's not mine. It's not an original one. It actually germinated from reading this fantastic article by Pat Corain. Curtis Samuel is either really bad or about to explode. And Pat gives a phenomenal rundown of exactly the kind of volume that Curtis Samuel is seeing and just how he's underperforming it as this, like, you know, this quote unquote deep threat. And one of the things is it doesn't matter. At least personally to me, it doesn't matter as long as he's still going to see the targets. But we've kind of seen those targets dry up. Part of it is because Kyle Allen is pretty bad, and you know, I mean, like they're feeding CMC pretty much the same volume of targets as DJ Moore. But if you go back to the highlights, like one of the things is, like, people have, like, begged DJ Moore, this intermediate guy, and if you look at his where he gets targeted in the RotoViz Stat Explorer, yeah, most of it is in the in the lower quadrants of the field and the intermediate quadrants of the field. But a lot of that has to do with the fact that it's Kyle Allen under center. Again, he's still a fairly decent quarterback. I'm not going to say he's terrible, but he's fine. But all it does speak to just how good DJ Moore is. And really what makes me more excited about DJ Moore is that he's doing this. He's breaking out and continuing a sustained breakout at this young age. And he's just screaming and taking away a lot of, like, Samuel's target share. Just wanted to go back to the dynasty question, just where you would take him. So, you know, Blair and I co-own a squad over in DFWC. We shared our roster with you, and we took DJ Moore as the wide receiver 13, which puts him squarely in the middle of the third round. We took Diggs as wide receiver 10. After that came Keenan Allen, then Adam Thielen, and then, and this is, looks really bad, AJ Green. Would you be putting DJ Moore as a top 8 wideout, or would you be considering him, you know, if you had to draft him on your roster, like, what is the latest you'd let him go?
Yeah, I think you can move him into that range. I think, you know, you obviously still have Michael Thomas there, number one. I think you have Juju at number two, despite what's happened to him this year. You know, we could, a little bit like we've seen with Amari Cooper, if you have a second horrible year, you know, you start to fall, people lose confidence in you. But it's pretty clear what's happened there with that team this season. Hopkins getting a little bit older still has the value. Devonta Adams a little bit older still has the value. Certainly, you want every little bit you can get of those two Bucks wide receivers. Amari Cooper has moved back into that ultra elite range, despite what he may have done to your quad-owned team today. After you get out of that, I mean, Stephon Diggs, maybe the best receiver in the NFL, going to be tricky to put up huge, huge points in that offense. And then Tyreek Hill, obviously, uncoverable just in general, certainly uncoverable with Patrick Mahomes. Once you get beyond that group, then certainly DJ Moore is just as good a selection as any of the rest of those guys I mentioned.
Yeah, I think that's right. You can quibble about a lot of the guys in that range, and different people will have them ranked differently, but they all make a pretty strong case to be almost in the top 12 of dynasty wide receivers. One thing that I was hoping for going into this season was that perhaps we could see a breakout season from DJ Moore and also from Curtis Samuel. And I don't know if, you know, the quarterback change has basically made that impossible, but do you think that this offense is good enough to kind of sustain both of those guys at a high level, and Christian McCaffrey with Kyle Allen under center?
I think it is, because McCaffrey is not one of those running backs who needs to have 30 carries, 20, 25 carries. The thing that is so exciting about what they've done is that they've used their best player, but they've used him in a way where he is most effective. Now, that doesn't mean that he's not also the best running back in the NFL taking the handoff. I think he probably is. But when you're using him as this dynamic pass catcher, you're moving the chains. Everything that they did today is what they should be doing. And so, especially if you maybe take a little bit of that volume away from Greg Olsen, you know, if we're projecting forward, he's not going to be around having a huge role in the offense. Certainly those three guys could be big time dynasty values for a long time.
Philip Lindsay handled 13 carries for 57 yards, and he tacked on an 11-yard reception in Denver's Week 12 loss to the Bills. Meanwhile, Royce Freeman rushed twice for 20 yards and caught both of his targets for 9. Sean, it looks like Lindsay has emerged as the primary running back in the Broncos' backfield. What are you doing with Freeman in redraft leagues going forward, and how do you gauge both Freeman and Lindsay's values in dynasty leagues?
Redraft, it's pretty dark, right? I had to decide today between Freeman and N'Keal Harry and Greg Olsen for sort of the last flex spot in a couple of my deep leagues where you have three receivers and then still multiple flexes, and benched Freeman. Partly the matchup there, but when his receptions started to tick down. I mean, this quarterback change hasn't been good for anybody with that offense. Certainly they're going to be going to their rookie here at some point, you know, if health permits. And with the Broncos in Dynasty, I think you have to like both guys. Philip Lindsay can clearly play. He's not necessarily Christian McCaffrey, you know, nobody is, but this idea that the small backs are going to get hurt or that they can't sustain what they do. I mean, Lindsay is explosively fast, right? Sees the hole, hits the hole, gets through the hole. You know, you want to have players like that in the contemporary NFL, have really no questions about him. But Royce Freeman, he's still, I mean, he looked like he was going to emerge as sort of a discount David Johnson, where you have this big back that has great agility, soft hands, you know, gets into that second level and then, you know, tough to bring down, but really gives you this player who is multifaceted and you can leave in for three downs. Now, you're not necessarily going to have that when you also have Philip Lindsay, but just having a bigger back who has that three down skill set, very exciting for fantasy owners. I don't know that we've completely lost that at this point. But really, the problem is that Denver's offense is not going to support very much. It's not going to support much beyond Cortland Sutton the way it is now. And certainly we saw today that in tough matchups, it's not even going to support that. So I'm excited to see what Denver might do. Certainly not really as a Chiefs fan, but as a fantasy owner, excited to see what they might do in the future. But they've got a lot of work cut out for them. This team has really deteriorated over the last 18 months or so.
Yeah, Denver is a really interesting team. I mean, in terms of like their offensive weapons outside of quarterback, they got, you know, a lot of my favorite guys between Sutton and Lindsay and Freeman, and then Noah Fant also at tight end. So there's a lot of a lot of guys that I would like to see be able to, you know, be fantasy relevant and even more on a regular basis. Obviously, that's maybe not happening with Brandon Allen, but yeah, I don't know. For the rest of the season, are you comfortable playing any of these guys besides Sutton?
What do you think, Zonar? Do you fantasy somebody who was starting to emerge a little bit, but just is so tricky week to week? And now we finally do. It's been a difficult season for tight ends, but yet we also have had some big games from some guys you wouldn't necessarily have expected, but the volume was there. You could kind of see maybe a week ahead of time. So if you got lucky and or you were playing it just right, have a league where you can really move between these guys, then maybe your tight end scoring isn't that bad. You don't have to go to someone like Fant. Hassan, how are you looking at tight end, especially in the context maybe of Denver here?
If I have Fant, I'm totally fine with rolling him out. I mean, I took David McIntyre's advice and I tried to pick up Jared Cook where he was available because it was just a matter of time till he came back. What's really interesting about this Denver team is that, and Blair alluded to it, they really just need a quarterback. Like they're missing the one piece that makes this entire offense kind of tick. What I like a lot about Brandon Allen is that he's got zero compunction about just feeding his best guys, even if he can't sustain drives. So you see Courtland Sutton and Noah Fant just like taking up all the target share for viable receivers, and that's just what you want as a fantasy owner, right? Like Courtland Sutton unfortunately didn't do very well, but he got 8 targets and he underperformed that volume, and partially, you know, it's a result of the fact that we got Brandon Allen here. It's not necessary because we've seen Sutton smash. Like so you've got these guys who are being targeted relentlessly by one guy. So you know, you got the boom weeks that are gonna eventually come. So I think you could actually do a lot worse in Fant, because if all you're doing is looking for 5 targets out of your tight end, like at the very least or the floor, and that's pretty much a usable tight end week for you. You can definitely get out there and get way worse than Noah Fant, and you can, you know, like Dawson Knox, for example, who is, you know, who saw 2 targets on the Bills, like another rookie tight end, or TJ Hawkinson, who isn't seeing very much work with Jeff Driskel under center. I have no compunction about rolling the bones on Fant, because I like the fact that, you know, they're looking to target Fant short. In these, if you look at the Stat Explorer, they're just trying to get him into space so that he can just use his freakish athleticism, and that's kind of all what we want to see, right?
Yeah, I've got a lot of him in Dynasty, and put out a few feelers when there were some big name guys available as part of trades. You know, you're saying this guy is going to be good next year. Those trades weren't accepted. I often find that these trades that aren't accepted a year from now, you're very excited that they weren't, and I'm still, you know, very happy to have him going forward.
Attention, past, present, and future MyBookie players. For this week only, MyBookie is offering a risk-free bet on the Bears-Lions game. Simply choose a team against the spread for up to $250, and if you win, congrats. You've got extra holiday spending money. And if you lose, congratulations as well, because MyBookie will give you all of your money back. And it's a no-brainer, because you literally cannot lose. It's no risk, all gravy. And it doesn't matter whether you're an experienced player or a first-time customer, MyBookie welcomes everyone who's coming to play. So quit waiting around and sign up today. And if you find yourself that you're looking to bet on sports but you have a lot of questions, don't sweat. MyBookie's customer service team can walk you through the process. And the best part is, if you join now, you'll still have one last shot to take advantage of their incredible sign-up offer. Just log on to mybookie.ag and make your first deposit with promo code RotoViz, and MyBookie will match your deposit dollar for dollar to jumpstart your bankroll. And that's on top of the risk-free bet. And let me repeat, that's a guaranteed deposit match and a risk-free bet for this week only. So if you're a true football fan who's just looking to watch some football while eating turkey, you don't let this opportunity pass you by. You simply cannot lose. Make sure you do your part to support your team this season. Just hop on the gravy train, get in the action with MyBookie. You play, you win, you get paid. Let's get into no shit now.
All right, first item. Bo Scarborough rushed 18 times for 98 yards in Detroit's Week 12 loss to Washington.
That's going to be a no shit.
So it seems like the main takeaway here, though, is that the Lions lost to Washington. Have they moved directly into the tank competition as well? It was interesting, I think, because I was going against several teams today where it was just Lions all across the board, and they had all the skill positions covered. Scarborough, Jones, Galladay, and Hawkinson. That lineup didn't work out today. You would think that Washington would be the time that it would work out. But this is, again, week 12. Very interesting, because a lot of guys highly focused on these bye week players, and if you didn't have bye week guys today, you know, that 200 points that I mentioned earlier could really pull you back in. So Lions, I think, really fading away at this point.
I gotta say, no shit was not the way I expected you to go, Hassan. You think Scarborough is legit?
And that he's gonna just be like the 1 and 2 down back. Yeah, absolutely. Like they rotated Ty Johnson in a little bit. They rotated, you know, J.D. McKissick a little bit, but I mean, at this point, it's clear that Patricia, his dreams of an RBBC are coming true, and somehow all it took was Bo Scarborough suddenly showing up on their roster, like when no one realized it until like last Sunday. So you know, I mean, I think this is just how it's going to be. It's just Driskel is incapable of like really sustaining drives. It's difficult, I think, in that regard. And like Scarborough had 18 carries, and nobody, like Johnson and McKissick combined for 5. And I think that this is a trend that's likely to hold. So for those of you who are looking to play the Turkey Day Slate in DFS, Scarbrough is someone you might want to consider in the early game.
Amari Cooper failed to catch either of his two targets in the Cowboys' Week 12 loss to the Patriots.
Shit, no.
The big takeaway here, though, is that the quad-owned team managed to dodge this bullet in advance. So we got Pat, Pete, Hassan, Blair, you guys moving along. Is Amari Cooper coming back next week, going to play well? Hassan, what happened in this game? Is this weather or is this injury?
I think it's a bit of just being draped with Stephen Gilmore all over him. And the one time that he was targeted, Gilmore picked the ball off. Did either of you guys, were either of you guys unfortunate enough to watch this game?
No, luckily.
No, I had almost all the first wave.
This was Jason Garrett at his worst. This was Jason Garrett as absolute worst. This was a man looking to establish the run so hard it was legitimately just unwatchable because there were just so many three and outs and just so many handoffs. Right. And it was really frustrating because it was the first half was torrential buckets and this team just refused to throw and they just tried to establish Zeke and Pollard. And then they tried a lot of short stuff at Randall Cobb. And they tried Witten a little bit as well. It was just nothing was working. The team kind of played poorly, but also the game plan was incredibly subpar. There was absolutely no creativity on their offense. And Amari had a couple of big plays called back on a couple of penalties. We might have gotten 6 points out of him, which would have been nice.
Leonard Fournette contributed 97 yards and 2 touchdowns on 24 carries while adding 9 grabs for 62 yards and 12 targets Sunday in Jacksonville's Week 12 loss to the Titans.
No shit.
So Fournette is basically what David Johnson would have been if he could only run straight ahead. And now Fournette is what David Johnson would be if he could run at all. So it's exciting here, I think, to see Fournette get a little bit of the value out of his touches. Because as we've been writing about, Blair in the EP report all season long, he has been right there. I fell to third place this past week. But for most of the season, he's trailed only Christian McCaffrey in terms of expected points.
Cole Beasley hauled in 6 of 9 targets for 76 yards and 1 score in Buffalo's Week 12 win over the Broncos.
Nice. Also, shit, no.
Yeah, but Beasley, I think this one is just that once John Brown owners got very comfortable in what he was going to do and the massive gains he was having, we had to go back in this direction. They were bailed out by the touchdown pass here. So those of us who feel like we're playing against John Brown every week can at least know that Davis and Matthew Friedman somewhere are still very, very happy about calling this guy back out of Pittsburgh State.
Vance McDonald caught his lone target for 1 yard in the Steelers' Week 12 win over the Bengals.
No shit.
How many games, Hassan, does Vance McDonald have more than one catch?
This is a very good question, and I think part of it has to do with the fact that I'm looking it up on the status bar right now, so I'm vamping. But I will say, part of it has to do with the fact that the quarterback situation not all that great. But the other part has to do with the fact that, what are you guys' thoughts on James Washington, but also Deontay Johnson?
Yeah, good question. James Washington was kind of, I remember him as a prospect, kind of a little bit tough to evaluate because he has this monster efficiency coming out of college, but also is older. Pittsburgh seemed like a good landing spot because they didn't necessarily have that deep threat after Martavis Bryant left. So it's been a little bit disappointing to see, obviously, him not get to play with Roethlisberger this season. But it was nice to see that, that one long catch he had today. I guess if there's a connection with Devlin Hodges and Hodges is going to be the QB going forward, then, wheels up for Washington. But I don't know. It's another one of these offenses that we just wish were playing better.
So Vance McDonald over the last 3 weeks, before the Bengals, had 7-7-7. He's just been inefficient with his workload. He's not topped 30 yards in any of those three games. He was fortunate to have a receiving TD all the way back in week 9. This is a guy who is just wildly underperforming. His expected points in his fantasy and his fantasy points over expectation are very, very poor. So it's actually not that big of a surprise to see Pittsburgh just sort of go away from it. I mean, Tomlin's made an insinuation that like, Mason Rudolph wasn't the guy like a few weeks ago where he was just not like where they won, but he wasn't particular. It was against the Rams where they won, but he wasn't particularly pleased with how the offense was failing to function. I think this is, you know, pretty much flashpoint for them because the offense looked very different with Hodges under center. What are your thoughts, Sean?
Well, going back to James Washington there, he was one of the guys that our projection system, a lot of the great work by writers of the past, and certainly a lot of great work by Blair, you know, pointing out that not that he couldn't be a good NFL player, because a lot of these guys can be good NFL players, but he was overvalued, right? And that he projected more as a role player and maybe someone who would have a little bit of a slow start to his NFL career, which is what we've seen. Now, I think on these big games, especially a big game, which the perspective of probably is inflated a little bit, right? Because when you have these really nice performances with the backup, and that's one of the things with Deontay Johnson too, is someone who has performed well this season at the same time that Juju is struggling, which I think amplifies a little bit the impression of what is going on there. I think if you can sell these guys for great value in your dynasty leagues, then you want to go ahead and do that. You want to take whatever profit or minimize your loss there. Certainly, if you can't move them, I do think that there's reason for optimism because this offense is going to go back in the direction of being a pass-first offense supporting those guys. So that's what it needs to be, right? I do think the other fun part today, though, is we had a decent game from Benny Snell, who perhaps will not be a good NFL player, but someone who is a fantastic college player. And really the difference in the way that he is looked at versus someone like David Montgomery, it very strange to me because Snell, fantastic college player, really a better college player than Montgomery. And then they go and they have similar workouts, which is to say very poor. And yet one player continues to really rise as a prospect and the other one sort of disappears. The good thing, I think, is that we saw today clearly that he didn't disappear for the Steelers, right? They still really like him. And so for me, that was the most exciting thing that came out of the Steelers' performance.
The most exciting thing for me was Gareth White getting some work. Huh? 6 carries, 43 yards. 7.2 yards per carry. We don't have to deal with whatever Trey Edmonds is. And they might be sunsetting Jalen Samuels here as well. Because Gareth White was a guy who we were fairly excited. Devin McIntyre wrote him up as a pretty electric prospect to look at in the Chicago backfield. And the Steelers claimed him when he was released. And they immediately upgraded him to their active roster because of his ability to play special teams. So if you're looking for a speculative ad on your waivers for whatever little fob is available, you could do worse.
And certainly you've mentioned Devin a couple times now. For anybody who wants to consistently find sort of these invisible guys that no one in your league will have heard of, and so you're not going to have a lot of competition for them, but they are going to come around later and score points and win leagues for you, definitely follow Devin, check out his articles, you know, get into the road of his Patreon and interact with him because he's going to have the guys for you.
Saquon Barkley compiled 59 yards on 17 carries along with 2 catches for 1 yard on 3 targets Sunday in New York's Week 12 loss to the Bears.
This is going to be a no shit for me, actually.
Oh, it's got to be the other way, right? Because I don't know if Blair has checked this out, but he and I and our buddy Curtis Patrick are fighting for a spot in the Kitchen Cinco semifinals. And Barkley was supposed to be, along with McCaffrey, the driver of my squad. And it turns out that, you know, he's more one of these dead zone backs this year where the value you get does not remotely balance out the risk you have that he might get injured on any given play. How is he not getting 7 or 8 targets a game? Among all of the things that have happened this year, this may be one of the more underappreciated, or just you look at what Nick Chubb has done, what Dalvin Cook has done. Those guys have been absolutely fantastic. By contrast, having Barkley look like this and not involved the way that he should be, is it's mind-boggling. It's hard to figure out what the Giants are doing here.
So part of it, I think, I wonder how much of this really still stems from the high ankle sprain that he suffered like all those weeks back. And again, I mean, it's superhuman to consider the fact that Barkley would be able to come back after, you know, a bye week and just sort of smash. And I was really kind of hoping he would. But it's not too long ago that he, you know, I mean, 2 weeks ago, he rushed 13 times for 1 yard. What really frustrates me is that Pat Shurmur is, he's just feeding. I mean, and here's the thing. He should be feeding the wide receivers. He's giving Darius Slayton 7 targets, Golden Tate 7 targets, Sterling Shepard's back. He got 9 today. And a Caden Smith, a rookie tight end, got 6. And I think that probably because Barkley might just not be doing particularly well. He had 3 targets today, caught 2 of them for 1 yard. Like, I think this high ankle sprain is really, really getting... it might really be the primary driver here. And I mean, obviously, and some of it comes down to just Daniel Jones. I mean, if you're a Giants fan, are you feeling existential despair that your quarterback got outdueled by Mitchell Trubisky? I don't know, because I feel really, really bad for Saquon Barkley, because he should be it's a long fall from grace. And I mean, the guy is just such a tremendous, like, transcendent talent to actually watch. I'm really hoping that he's able to heal up. I did want to ask both of you guys, Davis Maddock on his podcast actually posited a few weeks ago that he thinks Saquon could be a stealth shutdown candidate now that, you know, the Giants are 2-9. And, you know, I mean, they're not going to really win many more games going forward. So, like, at what point do you think that the Giants choose to actually just sit Saquon for his own sake? Just so, I mean, there's nothing left for them to do except for try to get, like, a higher pick, right? So do you think Saquon is a stealth shutdown candidate? And if so, when should they shut him down?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think that... I would be surprised if they did shut him down this season, to be honest. I mean, I think some workload management probably is maybe something they might be doing. I mean, maybe this was part of it, although you'd think that it would be more prudent to give him more targets and less carries, but whatever. Yeah, I'd be surprised if they did something that kind of seems rational from a real football perspective like that. But yeah, I don't know. I guess it's a possibility. Do you see NFL teams really do that often? I mean, this early in the season or until, you know, that's maybe more of a week 17 thing. I'm not sure.
You would certainly have to come up with another injury, and then that makes the Giants look bad as well. This goes back to the situation we see every week where teams don't really know what they're doing in the preseason and they need the practice, and yet they hold those guys out of those games, and that may make sense, right? But then you immediately get into the regular season and teams are down by 3 touchdowns on the final drive, and they have a lot of their starters in because they're trying to make those final margins look better, because nobody wants to get fired, which is a very reasonable approach for human beings to take. I think we have a little bit of the same thing here with the Giants, where the coaches want to win. Ownership and just the team in general is going to want the fans to have something to be excited about. And if you're a Giants fan, Barkley is the guy. I think it's a real hit that the team would take and possibly have, you know, one of these hangover types effects if they were to do that. Now, in terms of just him and the long-term success of the franchise, it would make a lot of sense.
Tyler Boyd caught 5 of 9 targets for 101 yards and 1 touchdown in the Bengals' 16-10 Week 12 loss to the Steelers.
No shit.
Boyd in the lineup for your quad-owned team today, guys?
No, he was on the bench. Cooper in the lineup.
Yeah, and Peter Overzet actually mentioned that he was complaining about his lack of targets and we should have just played him based on that. Did you guys happen to watch him on that drive where he scored the touchdown?
No, the Bengals were not in the immediate queue for initial watching.
You see, so that's one where I would genuinely recommend to find the highlights of Boyd, because he was an absolute mensch on that drive. He mossed 2 defenders. to make two incredible catches, one to keep the drive alive and then one to score the touchdown. And it was actually, you know how people still complain about just the fact that he had a pretty poor combine like all those years ago, despite the fact that, you know, he's a fantastic NFL player. So it's just one of those things that the combine testing doesn't match the fact that this is a guy who launches himself like and makes these like ridiculous one-handed grabs out of, you know, over defenders and just brings the ball down. It really was a joy to watch.
Well, Boyd had a ton of rushing yards in college too, which is easy to forget about. When his team wanted to get the ball in his hands, his numbers are not going to be what they would have been in a lot of other situations. And, you know, you may be in a dynasty league right now where trading is no longer allowed, but he's going to be less expensive this offseason than his true value indicates. And so, you know, he's going to be someone to go after just every single league in the offseason.
One of our listeners mentioned to me that he saw Boyd, and actually, let me just bring up the exact trade right here. Someone traded away Godwin for Chris for Tyler Boyd, a first and 2 seconds. What are your thoughts?
Say that again.
Godwin for Boyd, 2019 first and 2 2019 seconds. What side?
I think that is probably pretty rich for Godwin. I mean, I like Godwin a lot, but
it's tricky because you see the game that Godwin had today where it's tricky because you go back and forth. Like next week again, Mike Evans will have a 50-point game, and it'll be like, oh, you know, how could we have ever thought that Chris Godwin was the guy in this offense? But you know, Godwin is so good in so many different ways, where Evans seems to be good in more or less one way. Now, it's the most important way. And, you know, I think the fantasy douche will be very excited about the way that Mike Evans is playing this year and the way that he is good. But yeah, I mean, if Godwin ended up being the, you know, wide receiver two or three, you know, if he's the number two guy behind Michael Thomas, you know, a year or 18 months from now, I don't think that would be a huge shock based on what he's doing now. I mean, his point total just for this year indicates that he's at that level. So, you know, you get Tyler Boyd and a first, you know, you have to hit on the first in order for that to balance back out. At the same time, you know, we could be talking 12 months from now about this being a literal 2-for-1 where, you know, Boyd and Godwin are about the same. And then you got a first round pick in a draft that, you know, could be tricky, but it's also loaded. And so, you know, I think you have to like the Boyd side.
Ronald Jones rushed 12 times for 51 yards and a touchdown in the Bucs' Week 12 win over the Falcons.
No shit.
Ronald Jones, what are the chances that Jones still ends up being the best back from this class?
Yeah.
Pretty much. Are they higher than 0% or something?
Yes, absolutely. Still think, I mean, part of it is just watching the Arians usage because he seems to be fairly convinced that each of his RBs plays a very specific niche role. In case you guys are ever trying to justify to yourselves why Peyton Barber is getting work, or Dario Ogunbowale is getting work, but and I mentioned him before, but Packerin has done a really good job grinding the various Tampa Bay podcasts to understand how this works. So he's got a very, very well fleshed out, very well nuanced take on Jones. But I do think Jones is the guy they use primarily when the game is in neutral script and in slightly positive script, because he looks very good. It's a bit of a shame that they're not really using him as much in the receiving game. But at the same time, it's hard to expect, you know, eight to 10 targets every game for Rojo.
This is a situation here where I think that there are going to be a lot of people who are trying to get away from Jones after he's had a few good games. But when you watch them play, he looks absolutely fantastic, right? This is a guy who still makes a lot of mistakes, still gets tackled behind the line of scrimmage on occasion when maybe he could have gotten, you know, free for a yard or two. But when he gets through there, he's so fast. He has this stealth receiving upside where he could be a fantastic receiver and has the physical ability for it. And Arians has talked about that as well. So getting some encouragement from the coach there. Like you mentioned, you know, they are using these backs very situationally, and unfortunately Barber comes in a number of situations around the goal line. But we did see today that when Jones got his carry inside the 10, I mean, he punched through there, fought for that touchdown. He's the best guy they have inside the 10 as well. I think we're going to see more of this. This is still a fantastic athlete who was a big time prospect. And if you can go and buy him now, that there's some reason, I mean, at a certain point, the risk that he was just never going to be an NFL player was starting to get to be pretty significant. Now that you have a little bit of a floor, I think it makes sense to go out and buy and buy and buy. However, that's coming from a very biased perspective where I already own him in every single league. So there won't be any buying for me unless I join more leagues going forward.
So just to be clear, we're talking the class with Saquon Barkley, Nick Chubb, Philip Lindsay, and Hassan just said, and I guess by implication, Sean Siegel just said that maybe Ronald Jones is the best in that class.
Non-zero chance, but yeah, why not?
Yeah, maybe.
I actually do have a good question for you, though. Rojo versus Kerryon. Like, right, where do you think the ADPs shake out? Where do you think the ADPs shake out in redraft basketball next, let's say, April of next year?
Well, I mean, Kerryon came in... His ADP was already getting up there going into the season. I think he showed enough in his rookie year to really get people excited. And, I mean, he's had another season, unfortunately, derailed by injury. But maybe the fact that it was an injury that is taking him off the field means he still will be pretty valuable and pretty hard to acquire, you know, drafted pretty early. So I guess I'd still expect Kerryon to have the edge in terms of like dynasty ADP, but yeah, I mean, it depends if Rojo can have a few more games like this, or, you know, even show more of his pass catching skill that he showed a couple weeks ago. I think it could probably be close. Miles Sanders rushed 12 times for 63 yards in the Eagles' week 12 loss to the Seahawks.
No, this is going to be a shit no.
Yeah, Sanders, he's looked pretty good at times. He's one of our guys, obviously, on the zero running back candidates list, and it's been a little disappointing with the opportunity opened up for him that he hasn't done more. At the same time, this game, Carson Wentz, not just Carson Wentz, right? We had a little bit of certainly a sideways wind, serious velocity made it a little bit trickier playing Jacob Hollister today. And Russell Wilson had him wide open in the end zone, no one really within 10 yards, and, you know, just a clear line of sight, just a little, you know, 5-yard flip pass, managed to miss it over his head by, you know, 10 feet, which I think gives a little bit of a sense of how difficult it was. But Carson Wentz, on essentially screen passes, missed Sanders, you know, wide right, wide left, you know, looked a little bit like what we saw, sadly, from the Carolina kicker today. Maybe not that much that Sanders can do within the context of an offense where the quarterback is playing as poorly as he is, and the overall group is being as swallowed up by the Seahawks as they were.
The one big benefit for Sanders investors is the fact that this guy just, you know, I mean, he still got 12 carries. He put up 63 yards, you know, frankly, a really strong showing, given how he mentioned just how poor the offense actually looked. And the fact that J.J. really didn't, I mean, he really worked more so as a breather back than an actual someone who's going to be splitting the workload. It's clear the Eagles do like Sanders. I mean, this was a very condensed rushing share, and I'm quite excited to see how you guys will write up the Philadelphia Eagles in this week's Zero RB report. But it's tough because like Sanders is getting work now, and he's the only guy, and it's just the offense's ineptitude is really what's keeping him from having these boom weeks. You got to just keep starting him because the volume's there, right?
Yeah, I think so, as long as Jordan Howard is out, right? I mean, he also had 5 targets today, and obviously at least two of those, if the pass was a little more accurate or was not quite as windy, I mean, one of those, I think he could have almost turned into a touchdown. So could have been a very different game for Sanders. So yeah, I definitely think he's startable as long as there's not much competition. Either of you guys have a Greg Ward Jr. take?
Yes, I do. He's not very good, and the Eagles should stop really throwing to him and just giving him much work.
I'll go with Hassan's take there. It's it would have been nice to see a little bit more JJ there.
Definitely. Yeah, the guy that gets targeted fairly deep, and I wonder if the Eagles lost this deep threat some guy called DeSean Jackson, who, you know, future Hall of Famer, to an unfortunate hamstring, like one that, you know, forced him onto IR. And now they're just trying to run everything up the middle with like this 12 personnel stuff. Like, they really need to get, like, put JJ Arcega-Whiteside out there and just see what they have in him. Because either you wasted a second round draft pick on him and you should know sooner rather than later. But, maybe they really like Greg Ward ahead of Jordan Matthews. I don't know. But I really think that the lack of usage here for JJ Arcega-Whiteside, especially after Peterson did say that Arcega-Whiteside will get playing time once Alshon Jeffrey is hurt, and the fact that that hasn't come to fruition is really frustrating. So I don't know what we're missing, because he does see a handful of targets. And again, this is a team that had an elite deep threat. They don't have him anymore. They need someone to open up the middle of the field. It's very difficult when you're trying to run Ertz and Godert, you know, through the middle of the field, and there's no space. I don't know. But, you know, this is why I co-host a podcast, and I'm not in the NFL.
Mitchell Trubisky completed 25 of 41 passes for 278 yards with one touchdown and two interceptions, while adding 18 yards and a touchdown on seven carries Sunday in Chicago's Week 12 win over the Giants.
I'm actually going to go with no shit for this one.
And what is the rationale there?
Blair and I talked about this like on the pod a few weeks ago, but we identified Chicago as having a fairly conducive schedule for quarterbacks for the RotoViz fantasy streaming app. It was one of the reasons why we spent a lot of our fob to acquire him in DFWC, and we benched him for Foles today. But part of it is just it feels like a very public falling out between, you know, Nagy and quarterback, because it just feels like they were forcing him to do stuff that he wasn't able to do. You know, asking him to make all these real NFL throws when that's never been Trubisky's game. He's better off scrambling and just sort of, you know, being a little bit more improvisational. Treat him more like a Josh Allen than an actual, you know, than he is a Deshaun Watson, right? And I think they did a little bit of that today, because they minimized David Montgomery's role. I mean, Montgomery had 13 carries for 22 yards, which, okay, whatever. But they let Trubisky improvise a little bit. And I think after they hit the Nader against like the Rams in that god-awful game, I think they kind of went back to the drawing board. It looks like they're prioritizing A-Rob, Miller, Cohen. Like, this is it's actually magical. Like, Nagy has spent an entire season pretending Tariq Cohen doesn't exist, and he brings him back out, and like, at least he's allowing for a quick athletic outlet receiver who Trubisky can at least make layup throws to. He got 9 targets today. He got 7 of those. He only, you know, put up 29 yards, but it's good to have that outlet receiver for the quarterback, especially one who's as inaccurate as Trubisky, right?
Well, it's certainly good to see these quarterbacks being used in the way that they can be successful, like you mentioned. And not every quarterback is going to be an Aaron Rodgers or a Patrick Mahomes, or, you know, someone like a Drew Brees. And to have guys like Trubisky, Allen, you know, someone like a Russell Wilson doesn't take a lot of the throws off the initial read, draws those plays out. And one of the reasons why his receivers every season are just ridiculously efficient is because he's not your traditional NFL quarterback and is consistently throwing to them. Once plays break down, he's extended the play, and then he's got guys wide open. So you have these efficiency numbers that really pop out as being ridiculous year after year. It's very difficult to find a starting NFL quarterback. So when you have someone like a Trubisky, even someone who's had as many problems as he's had, it's certainly important not to give up on them prematurely and to find out what they can do well. And also, again, a very exciting game, I think, for Allen Robinson owners today. Keeping his name in play to remain in that middle tier of dynasty wide receivers.
Jarvis Landry caught 10 of 13 targets for 148 yards and 2 touchdowns in the Browns' Week 12 win over Miami.
No shit.
Jarvis. He's one of the guys that, well, I should say I love. I know that there, you know, are certain RotoViz quarters who don't like the fact that he is not a deep guy, but someone who plays as hard as he does. And the Browns, I don't know if they're starting to turn a corner. Clearly, results against Miami do not mean the same thing they mean against legitimate NFL teams, but huge to see this game today. I mentioned in the opening the main event that Ben and I have, and we were texting back and forth today. Our team has Mike Evans, and he's been the guy for us since David Johnson, obviously, not playing well, injured, all that kind of thing. So anytime that you are without your first-round pick, you have to have a lot of things go right to stay competitive, and Mike Evans has been the guy. We were facing Chris Godwin, and so you're looking at that game, and if you had told us before the day that one of those guys would have 37, the other would have 9, and that we were going to be on the bad side of that split, then I don't think that we would have told you that we were going to win by 25 points or so. But Landry, the thing today finishes with less than a point below Chris Godwin, so really bailed us out, kept us in there along with, again, our DJ Moore and some of those other RotoViz guys, including the big game from Will Fuller finally back on Thursday night.
Rashad Penny rushed 14 times for 129 yards and one touchdown in the Seahawks 17-9 week 12 win over the Eagles.
No shit.
That's the direction you're going to go on that one. All of that I just said, plus we benched Penny for Blair's favorite NFL player and one that it sounds like most of your internet time has been spent on looking for nicknames for Patrick Laird there. And so it seems like you found a good one.
What are you guys doing with Benny? This is really frustrating because it seems like he's coming alive at the wrong time, because any team where I was relying on him is dead.
Yeah. I don't know. Just when you're about to give up on Penny, or actually probably most of us already have, it sounds like even Sean did after starting Laird over Penny this week.
But this is good though now. I mean, they're not all dead. Well, Hassan, it sounds like maybe yours are, should be, right? But I mean, this is huge. If this game could be the start of something, even if it's not like this, but sort of where we were with Rojo a few weeks ago, if it could be the start of just a little bit. So David Johnson out, you have Jones, you have Penny, suddenly those zero running back teams, because zero running back teams could have this construction as well. Those would be two of your main guys. You know, if you had, looking through some of the teams that Chad Schroeder has, the top fantasy player in the world, again, you know, looking through my leagues, he's near the top of most of them. And since he plays in quite a few, I'm sure that isn't just limited to the leagues I'm in. And a lot of his teams are very, very wide receiver heavy. So I don't necessarily think that he's a Penny owner, but it's certainly very possible to be wide receiver heavy and to be heading into week 13, borderline to make the playoffs. If you could make the playoffs with a win next week, move into, you know, the 3-week race for all the marbles with him, now suddenly you've got a shot, right? I mean, he looked slow but feisty on that long touchdown run.
I mean, for all the talk of like the team just not abandoning Chris Carson because of the fumble issues, I think today was just one where they were like, okay, it's time to actually abandon this, because they were using him. I mean, Carson saw 4 targets in the receiving game, Penny saw 1. And it's clear that they still don't really trust Penny. So I think it's going to be more of a Chris Carson show next week. But I really think that this is now. Yeah, I mean, again, Pete Carroll is completely just stuck by Carson, despite all the backbreaking fumbles. And now it's going to be really crucial for Carson to take care of the football like he was in that one big, he had that one stretch from week 4 through week 8 where he took care of it, but he's fumbled at least once in every other game.
And I think this is the value too here of having these zero running back selections, you know, like a Jones, like a Penny, where you've got a first round pick, right? So the Seahawks, despite how much they like Carson, and they should, he's been very good. And Penny has had some problems, right? But you're desperately wanting to be able to go back to your fans, the people you answer to, if you're the GM with the owner, and say, look, we were right about this. And so anytime you have a game like this And the people who get to decide whether or not you play have the incentive to show we were right. And now they have an excuse to give you more chances. That's a very positive sign, because there are still a lot of people in the Seahawks organization that want to see him do well.
Right before moving on, I want to remind you to become a RotoViz Patreon and gain exclusive access to RotoViz Radio Slack, where you can ask questions, gain league-winning advice from any of the podcast and writing team, like Hassan and myself. Patronships start at just $6 a month. Become a RotoViz Radio patron today to join the exclusive community of listeners. Sign up at patreon.com/RotoViz Radio. We want to remind everyone that you can get a listener's only 10% discount to a RotoViz NFL pass through the NFL podcast homepage, rotoviz.com/podcast. Your subscription gives you unlimited access to all our premium NFL content and all our tools, and it also supports the pod. Plus, for a limited time only, we're offering a 2-year RV Radio NFL sub, which includes a 10% discount and complimentary access to RotoViz Radio Patreon and the RotoViz Radio Slack channel for the 2019 season. So if you're in a playoff push right now, you definitely want to get on that. Make sure you're getting all your start-sit advice. And you can get that with a 2-year subscription with 10% off. And all you have to do is head to rotoviz.com/podcast, sign up via the 2-year RV Radio subscription. We'll email you Slack access details within 48 hours. Once again, that's rotoviz.com/podcast. All right, moving on to news item number 3. Sam Darnold completed 20 of 29 passes for 315 yards, 2 touchdowns, and 0 interceptions in the Jets' 34-3 Week 12 win over the Raiders. Sean, Darnold has looked a lot better over the last 3 games, and the Jets' offense finally roared to life. Do you think that this recent performance is sustainable going forward?
I do, to an extent, right? We're still going to see the Jets be this team that's in progress, right? That is developing. And Darnold, you know, he's going to be the answer for them. They have some fun pieces. Today, it was back to, for really one of the first times all season, you know, we saw Robbie Anderson do a little bit more what he can do when Jamison Crowder looked like, you know, he was primed to be the guy with this matchup today. You have Le'Veon Bell. It's really a matter of if the coaching situation will mesh with the players, if the players buy in, you know, with the coaches, if they all get enough time to develop. One of the things that is tricky when you get into these situations where the team is bad and has young players and has a coach who doesn't have really the resume to be able to sit back and say, look, you know, we're bad, but I know what I'm doing. Right. When you're a coach who is in that process of proving that, then there are so many different pieces, so many things that can go wrong, and so many chances for the constant reboots. And so I think for the Jets here, it'll be important for them to play well down the stretch just so they can have some continuity going forward and some of these young guys can build together.
Yeah, and I'm also very excited because the next few games for the RotoViz strength of schedule app are rated out as green. So you get Cincinnati and then you get Miami. It gets pretty tough for week 15 and 16 of the playoffs, but by then you know very well to avoid Baltimore and Pittsburgh. So I think Darnold here is a viable streamer. I just wanted to ask a question. I mean, Anderson caught 4 of his 5 targets for 86 yards and a touchdown. Like, is this a guy who you feel comfortable? Do you think you can slot him in next week here against Cincy?
I don't, and I've even dropped him in some redraft, which didn't necessarily pan out today because in those double flex positions, he would be an excellent performer there with those stats. But this offense, the way they used him, long-term though, you know, I love him as a dynasty buy. He's still a guy where, you know, that deep threat is hugely valuable. He could be next year's John Brown, right? Where he moves to an offense that is more willing and more capable of using him appropriately. And suddenly you're getting those big games, you know, almost every week.
Yeah. I kind of agree with that. I don't know that I'm comfortable starting him any week, although I am in the, you know, Sean mentioned the kitchen Cinco League that I'm trying to move on in the playoffs kind of unsuccessfully, it looks like. But Robbie Anderson is someone I've been starting pretty much every week just out of necessity, because it's like choosing between, you know, him and Robert Foster and Paul Richardson, and there's not a lot of good options to add to your lineup there. But yeah, definitely seeing this game, seeing him – at least get those six targets, I think he had, or five targets rather, and do something with them. I think it's encouraging, and you know, at least you have to like the schedule going forward. And if there's a time when he's going to kind of come back to life, hopefully it's over these next few weeks. So yeah, unfortunately, in at least one league, I'm going to keep rolling him out, although it might not matter much going forward, but definitely don't feel confident about it. Although, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think he's done enough in his career thus far to show that he really is like an explosive player and can be a meaningful, you know, have a meaningful fantasy impact, and hopefully much more than that. So, I mean, I guess I'm hopeful. Yeah. hopeful, but I've been living with the poor results for many weeks now. So I'm also a little bit masochistic, maybe.
AJ Brown impressed with four catches for 135 yards and a touchdown on five targets Sunday in the Titans' Week 12 victory over Jacksonville. Sean, although Brown isn't receiving a significant number of targets, he's been very efficient with his workload over the course of the season so far. What are, you know, Brown's prospects for the rest of the redraft season, and where do you rank him among the rest of the rookie wide receivers today?
Well, this is a guy, you know, we've talked about our projection system, the different metrics that do have predictive value in terms of looking at these young wide receivers as they transition from college to the NFL, and then from that first year to the second year. And he checks a lot of the boxes that we like, and I think that's the reason why as a group, Rotoviz had him very high going into the season, as high as number two at a certain point, then obviously dropping down a little bit as the OTAs and then, you know, some of the training camp types of things went along. But especially the three of us, right, have really, really liked him and, you know, had him as high as number two. So when you're looking at that and you look at what he has done in this offense that is terrible, and you contrast what he's done with where Corey Davis is. Now, Davis has been a little bit of a bust, and so we can't simply say, oh, he's been better than Davis, so that means they're both good, or that he's awesome and Davis is good. I mean, Davis may not be someone who is all that viable in any way, shape, or form going forward. Maybe that doesn't tell us as much as we would like to think. However, as you mentioned, has looked great on the volume. He's a guy where if this offense takes the next step next season, I think we could be looking at him as, you know, almost taking this DJ Chark sort of jump to where not a big rookie season, but there were clear expectations or explanations for that. And then as a sophomore, and we talk, you know, so much on the show and on the site about that big sophomore jump for wide receivers. And if you want to dominate your league, you need to own as many of them as possible. He's certainly in that group where whatever his ADP is for next year, unless it gets to be absolutely crazy based on some, you know, sea change in what they're doing as a team, I think you have to own him absolutely everywhere.
Unlike DJ Chark, AJ Brown's actually on the field and producing, especially when he was considered to be kind of not even the third. He was considered to be more of a third/fourth stringer with Adam Humphries and Delanie Walker expected to play bigger roles than they currently are. What I find fascinating is that he is, it's almost DJ Moore-esque, which is a really high praise to pray, pay here. But at the same time, like, you're looking at someone who, when he gets the volume, he does a lot with it. And he's done so since like week one. He hasn't, you know, I mean, maybe his raw stats aren't as impressive, but I mean, this is a guy who's got the look of an actual solid possession wide receiver, like an alpha in the NFL. And it's something that Kevin Cole and I were talking about way back in May, in that maybe this is like the team, the Titans, do recognize that Corey Davis isn't the alpha, the presumptive alpha they thought he was when they drafted him at five overall. They think that AJ Brown gives them a good running mate with Corey Davis. I'm sure they're pleasantly surprised with the results that, you know, Brown is just a guy who that catch and run was actually fairly impressive. And he made a handful of other really big boy plays this season. And even in the game today, that it's, you can see this guy becoming like where we hoped he would be when he declared, and what we hoped his where he was when the comps came out within the Box Score Scout app, because like this guy's got like the look of someone who you should be able to throw the ball to, and he's able to get you the yards that you're looking for, kind of like a this is going to sound like pretty poor, but Jarvis Landry plus comes to mind.
Hassan, you've had him as high as number one in this class of wide receivers at different points. Is that true?
Yeah, I see him and N'Keal Harry as fairly interchangeable. Like, just the style that they play, their physical makeup, where they were drafted, not really similar, but they drew interest from the same teams who are looking for possession style guys. I think that those are your true, like, if you want to put this in any other way, it's like the Spider-Man meme for those two guys as prospects. The big difference and the weird thing that always gets to me about AJ Brown is because people who enjoy grinding the film were really big on DK Metcalf. They had to basically tell themselves the lie that AJ Brown is bad. And the leaps in logic it took to get there were actually very fascinating, because they were like, he's only a slot wide receiver. And it's like, well, we've got a majority of his games were played without DK Metcalf in the lineup. And if you think that like him making these like phenomenally athletic catches on the outside is him playing the slot, then maybe we're just watching in two different realities. Like, there's just no middle ground to be found here. So that's my long-winded way of saying that I do think that he is someone who should be on my short list of trying to smash, because I was smashing him a lot in best balls in the 18th and 20th rounds of BB10s and draft best ball leagues, because he was free.
And certainly there are some leagues where guys picked him very early. I'm in a league with Pete, for example, and Pete picked him, you know, in the first five picks and joked with me about he felt like he'd read something about him on RotoViz, which is probably an understatement. You're going to have a hard time getting him away from Pete. I've made some offers that I thought would be enticing, including some with Chris Godwin that did not go through. But in some leagues, he was drafted, you know, borderline first round, or even fell into the second round range. And I think when you have owners who maybe are not quite as attached, it would be somebody to go after in the offseason. This is a player who's bigger than people realize, faster than people realize, has better deep ball skills than people realize, and is also an absolute monster after the catch. So just, you know, sort of piling on with what you're saying there, Hassan, in terms of what he can do on a football field, those are the things you're looking for from a star.
So I'm just looking at our dynasty rankings and looking at where we all have Brown, and one guy who is pretty close to Brown in a lot of our rankings, maybe a controversial kind of dichotomy here, and that's with another rookie, Marquise Brown, who coming into or after the first few games of the season looked like he might actually be the best rookie wide receiver in this class, and then has since kind of cooled off a little bit. I'm just wondering where you would have AJ Brown in relation to, you know, a lot of these other rookie wide receivers like Metcalf or like Marquise Brown, who a lot of them have looked promising at different points of the season.
The exciting thing, I think, whether you're a dynasty owner or just already looking ahead to 2020 redraft, is that situation with a few of these guys has kept them down to where they are going to be affordable next year, right at the point in time where we would expect them to make this huge leap. Marquise Brown, another player that you want to have almost everywhere, and that's despite the fact that the Ravens really do profile as a very a relatively low volume passing attack. But one of the things that jumps out, you know, when you look at the AYA app on the site, for example, is that Lamar Jackson's efficiency this season, when he's targeted specifically his wide receivers, have been very, very high. And while we know that efficiency is not necessarily as sticky as some other types of things, we also know, Blair, from your work, that it's actually a very good sign for some of these guys as they go into their second seasons. And I think that when we're looking at Lamar Jackson, in some ways we're almost looking at someone who is, you know, if it can really be said about someone as good as Russell Wilson, that he's sort of a supercharged version of that, to where if you were to tell someone 5 years from now that Jackson, because of the things he brings to the table and because of the types of plays that are going to run and how that sets up for the wide receivers, that he's going to consistently have crazy efficiency numbers for his receivers in the same way that we've seen that with you know, Doug Baldwin and then Tyler Lockett. And now I really do think, you know, you also mentioned DK Metcalf, someone else who is likely to have some pretty fantastic efficiency. Metcalf dropped a long touchdown today that would have helped both Russell Wilson and Metcalf owners. All of those guys that I think you should be going for. The problem for me, and I think the thing that we'll be looking for in terms of what we do in the offseason with the rankings, is the quarterback position. Because if you're looking at Lamar Jackson, you're looking at Russell Wilson, I think you can have some confidence at what the floor is going to be and then what the ceilings could be if the volume ends up being there, which, you know, season to season, it might not be, but over the course of multiple seasons, you're probably not going to lose if you have a Marquise Brown, if you have a DK Metcalf. What are the Titans going to do at quarterback? What are they going to do with their team in general? They're almost one of these teams that's just good enough that they might not make some of the changes they need to make. And if they don't make those changes, is Ryan Tannehill good enough to get AJ Brown where we want, which, you know, is someone just like all those guys we mentioned at the top of the show, where these second year receivers are ranked in that 20 to 30 range as dynasty players. For AJ Brown to get up into that range, we would want to know more about the quarterback situation and just the overall team situation. You know, is this going to be a team that's really trying to get Derrick Henry, you know, 30 touches a game, or is it going to be a team that's trying to win Super Bowls?
All right, that'll do it for this edition of the Fantasy Football Report. Special thanks to our guest, Sean Siegel. Be sure to follow him on Twitter. You can follow him on Twitter at @FF_contrarian. Remember to rate and review the RotoViz Radio channel on Apple Podcasts and subscribe to our Patreon. For Hassan Rahim, I'm Blair Andrews. Thanks for listening. Thank you for listening to the Fantasy Football Report. Please rate and review the RotoViz Radio podcast channel on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Contact us via email, rotovizradio@gmail.com, and follow us on Twitter, @RotoVizRadio. And remember, you can always support the pod by subscribing to RotoViz at a 30% discount through the RotoViz Radio homepage, rotoviz.com/podcast.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.